So we're live.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Jenny
Hello.
of course, lost me, please. Welcome to the Jenny of Not Podcast. It's a Jenny podcast hosted by all the nerds. I am one of your hosts, Sam.
I am the other host, Paul. And last week was a bit fun, wasn't it? Where I kind of just handed over the reins to Becca and just logged off. I might do that again soon. Just give myself a night off, just because I get lazy now in my old age. But yes, tonight we are joined by a very special guest. No, we haven't flown her over from the States, but I
Haven't
think,
kidnapped her quite yet.
no, we'll try to work this out. Last time, I believe it's our third or fourth American that we've had on the Nerdy Up North podcast, I believe. Because only other two I can think of is Holly and Taffeta. So you are. So we'll say you are our third American that we've had
Yay.
on the Nerdy Up North pasta. So we've
Lucky
got the
number three.
yes, we've got the lovely Jill who keeps us positive and happy in the Discord, I would share. She's always like full of nice comments. I don't think you've ever said anything mean, anything yet. You've even been nice to Lee, which is always quite surprising. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Jill. Tell us about give us your nerdy credentials.
All right. So I am, when I think of nerdy, I think mostly like I'm a
Right.
Trekkie.
Yep. We won't judge you, don't worry. That's
I've
fine.
watched a
I
lot
see
of that,
that.
not all of it, but a lot of it. Thank you. And I'm in a role-playing game where with a lot of the others, with Becca. I'm in an Obsidian Fleet where we write we write what our characters are doing. And I've done that not with Obsidian Fleet, but our game has actually gone on for 23 years now,
Wow.
which is, yeah. So it's been a lot of fun. And our game joined in with Obsidian Fleet because we needed a home. So it's been good sailing since we got in with them. But I like other a number of other sci-fi series. I geek out about astronomy. I consider myself an Anglophile. I love learning anything about Britain, especially historically.
As we were just
So
having a
yeah,
conversation before.
you've got a lot for you to go
yes,
through.
but
There is, but it's I like it.
and more importantly, she is one of the sour sweet crew. She Jill braved the horrible sweets. I've still got a bag full that and she posted on Instagram as well, which was hilarious because your hubby didn't follow the script with that one, did he? He was kind of like
No, and to be fair, he's not paying attention to these kinds of things as I am. So like he just had no idea, and I was about ready to like explain what we were doing, and I was gonna name drop Nerdy Up North and everything. And then like I look over and he's just popped it in his mouth, and I'm like, wait a minute.
Nice.
And then like every time I watch it makes me crack up laughing because the look on his face as it just kind of sinks in is just it's just classic. I love it.
It was very slapstick comedy, and I think the best line came of it was good. I thought candy was meant to be fun.
Yes, I thought this was supposed to be pleasant. So yes.
Yes. Oh yeah.
He really kind of stole the show on that one. It was good.
No, it all worked done well. But yes, and we are here tonight to discuss because I think when we mentioned this on a podcast many moons ago that we were thinking about doing these two characters. Jill was instantly in my DM saying, "Oh, please, 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 can I talk about Laurel and Hardy with you?" And I was like, "Yes, you can," because that was probably the biggest surprise. Because I don't believe like I like normally we say we're going to do a film, TV show, or certain thing, and we'll get a little bit of a reaction. And I thought, "Oh, we'll talk about Laurel and Hardy." The reaction I was expecting from people was, "Who? What? Who are there?" And it was nice that it was like, yes, we're hitting our target audience already. So that's always a good sign. So, Sammy, do
Yeah.
you want to hit the disclaimer just
Yeah.
before? I don't think we're going to need any like too controversial in this episode, but still, it's always nice to have.
Just in case. Because this is our classy bit. So Everything discussed in today's episode is our opinions and our opinions alone. If you'd like to discuss anything from today's episode, please come and join us in the Facebook group. You can join us in the Discord or the comment section, where we can have an open discussion. But what we won't have is anyone coming for us and telling us our opinions are wrong, because we can all agree to disagree in fandom. So let's keep it fun, keep it kind, and keep the toxic behaviour out of nerdism.
Well said. And is there any taglines for this movie?
Absolutely none.
To be fair.
Absolutely no taglines. Not even, because you know on other ones that we've done, like the Marx Brothers and Some Like It Hot, the taglines came from newspapers and such like that, and nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Right, interesting. So when we picked this movie, because I said we're going to do a Laurel and Hardy movie, and there was quite an abundance to kind of choose from. So I did a search, and I spoke to my dad as well. Now, and it's interesting because we had a conversation before. It was hard to try and stifle the conversations we had before we went live, because as soon as we start talking, it led into one thing and led into the other, which was quite fun. This, like, isn't my dad's favourite Laurel and Hardy movie. And Jill, you said this isn't your favourite Laurel and Hardy movie. But I thought the premise, when I've read the story, because I've seen some Laurel and Hardy, but I hadn't watched this one before. I was like, I'm going to give this one a go. And a few of the clips I watched, it had me in kinks. So that was the main reason I chose it. But I'm interested to know, with you saying that, which is your favourite, Jill?
Well, it's very hard to choose a favorite. And I'll be honest, it's been a long time since I've watched any of them. But the ones that come to mind when I look through the titles, Toad in the Hole is one that I really like. There's a lot. I mean, it's all slapstick, but it's just some of the things. Stan has got his head stuck behind a pipe. And he's just, the head's moving up and down. It's like between a pipe and a wall. And it's like somehow he's gotten himself back there, but he can't get himself out. And I think he's got a black eye or two as well, or something like that. And, but in any of them, Stan's facial expressions just do me in.
Yes.
Babes in Toyland is another one done before the Disney version.
Yes.
And just some classic great stuff in there. And the Music Box is another favorite. It's a short, so it's only like 20 minutes long, if that, but they're trying to move a large, I believe, piano into a, like a third floor apartment or something. And it's just trying to get it up a hill, up the stairs. Eventually they're pulling it up with pulleys, and it's just chaotic hilarity.
And it's weird when you think about it, because this movie came out in 1937. Like, take that in. This is almost 100 years. It's not far off 100 years now, this movie came out. And the humour in it, yes, the storyline, it's what you expect, but it's still more complicated and interesting than a lot of, like, the slapstick or the comedy shows that you saw of the time. And not to steal what Sammy said before, because it was one of the things I did want to mention, Laurel and Hardy, people think of them just as like a comedy duo. They have had to evolve and change so many different times from when they started out. They were in like the silent movie industry, going into, like, say, the shorts, where they had like the cinema, you know, the, like the little cinema breaks where in between like the motion picture, where you used to have like a little like cliffhanger, you used to do like a Laurel and Hardy short that used to fit in there. Then they moved into like the grander schemes where they've done feature films where, like, as I said, like the one that we're talking about, We Out West, which I think that's the first time I've mentioned the title, so I do apologize. But it's so interesting to see them change. And they're not just a comedy duo, as we find out when we're watching this movie. They're so talented, like, as actors, performers, as singers. Like, and I know of the time, if you had to be in show business, you literally had to be do everything. You couldn't just be a one-trick pony. You had to be like tick the box for everything, otherwise you wouldn't work. And
No.
I don't think
No.
they get the credit for that aspect, because when they sing in this movie as well, their voices are so good.
Oh, they work so well together. They did 106 films in total, from 1921 to 1951, 34 in silent films, 45 shorts, and 27 full-length films.
They worked.
That's a lot of work in that time. Two very different upbringings, though. So Stan Laurel comes from theatre. His family actually owned one in the northeast of England and in Glasgow. But Oliver is a bit more interesting. He comes from the south and he comes from military. And it's a very, very different upbringing to the likes of Stan Laurel. And it's kind of, he was actually willing to go in what? So this is the difference between the two. Stan comes to America with the Fred, oh, what's his name? I've been reading about him all day and now I've forgotten his name. The Fred,
Charlie Chaplin.
it was Charlie Chaplin, but it wasn't his troupe. It was Fred, what's his name? Fred Carno. Fred Carno troupe, which does have Charlie Chaplin in. Stan was actually his understudy for a really long time. He was actually, they classed him as an impersonator at one point, a Chaplin impersonator.
All
But the
right.
difference between the two of them, but his career goes far and beyond Chaplin. Stan comes to America. Ollie is in America. Ollie is ready to sign up for World War One, but because of his weight and his health, he actually gets declined. Stan stays in America, so that doesn't happen to him.
Right, okay.
That's the difference between the two of them. So
Bless.
it's like it's almost like two of the like the what's the word like they don't like what oh I can't even think.
No,
What am
interesting
I
that
trying to say?
if you wanted to go back to like the history as well, like again, I didn't want to do too many facts because I know Sammy is the fact queen. Stan, like say Stan Laurel was born in Cumbria. He was brought up in North Tyneside, so Northeast history. They've Like say he was brought up in the Northeast where we're from, so that's why I'm surprised he doesn't talk with a Northeast twang, which I'm a little bit disappointed. And did you know that Laurel and Hardy performed twice at the Sunderland Empire
I did.
yeah, in 1952 and 1954? So we were graced
Nice.
with, like say, the legend that they
Royalty.
were, and apparently, like say. Stan Laurel has always had a great affection and great love of the Northeast, because anytime he would try out new acts or like new routines, he would try and perform it here first, like on a little tour, just to see how it kind of goes across. Because like say, apparently we were his people, shall we say?
Oh, that's
I read
nice.
that at one point his education included Gainsford Academy, which is outside of Darlington, and I know that's relatively close to you guys, so I didn't
Huh?
know if
It's only
either
a
of you
half hour
was
drive,
familiar with that.
joyride. He could have stolen the car or a horse and carriage and come and had a pint and something anytime.
So is Gainford still around, or is that
I don't think
long
so.
ago gone, or
Yeah,
okay.
but
We don't know Darlington very well. That's
don't go
fair.
there. It's not well. I'm not going to start slagging off Don, and it's no. It's better than Middlesbrough, shall we say? But it's just interesting, like these Hollywood greats and like the legends and like the backstory. You can kind of wove it or see where they come from, and it's nice to have a little bit of like local, like connection to them as well. So I can see why my dad has such a great affection, like affection to it. Now, this is me being brought up, not like, well, dragged up by my parents and grandparents, like watching Laurel and Hardy, watching the Marx Brothers. So that humor is just ingrained in me, and like I love it, and that always kind of stays with me. And I will always try and promote like this type of humor, this type of jokes, and this type of comedy as well. Because when you're watching this movie, it's like people think, oh, it's a 1937 movie. It's black and white. It's what like what's so special about it? And I dare anyone to watch this movie and not laugh or not even smile while you're watching this movie, because it's ridiculous at times, but the timing, the comedy timing, like even the greats now cannot even touch this with like how well and like the little jokes that they do. And like, it's kind of like, oh, we're going to do this bit now. You're not going to get the punchline now. You'll get the punchline 5 or 10 minutes later. And it's just so perfectly worked out. And for them to do it back then, like, it blows my mind that they knew and how this worked so well.
Yeah, it's the timing of the two of them is perfect, but it's also the callback to jokes as well is a big one in this, especially in the with the water scene.
Mm-hmm.
Happens at the beginning, happens at the end, and it actually, I didn't laugh the first time, but I did certainly laugh the second time when it happens again.
So, rather than talk about like the film, like in general, because like the plot is basically just, it's basic, but it's fun. It's overcomplicated. But what bit in this movie made you laugh the most? I'm gonna ask Jill, because I know like I rewound and watched it like a number of times again, just how stupid and funny it was, like a bit for me.
I think, gosh, it's hard to choose one. But I'm going to say the scene where they're running around with the deed chasing each other and like just the chasing itself. But then what's her name? The female.
Lola.
Lola, when she gets a hold of Stan and starts tickling him and he just uncontrollable giggle fits. And like so much so that he just hands the deed back over. And it's that's one of my favorite parts. I think
it's just the sheer joy, the sheer joy in Stan's face. Like if she wasn't really tickling them, I don't know what she was doing to him, but it was absolutely hilarious.
Did you not see her though? They couldn't hide the fact that she was actually laughing along with him, because his laugh is so infectious. She could, you can see her kind of tilting her head constantly, trying to like stop the camera, but it got to the point where they were like, you can't hide it anymore, so you're just going to have to kind of go with the face that you've got. That was one of my favourite bits. But and my another one was the when they're trying to get in the building with the mule.
With Donkey Lee, Lee's great ancestor of the donkey kind.
It's the fact that he's going again on the mule, like he's like pushing her away. It's like he doesn't quite get the prompts, and then he eventually gets on and he's like, where's the toolkit?
Mm-hmm.
Right here. Sorry. And he also uses toad in the hole as well as a joke. He calls him a toad in the hole. That was really funny.
The slow burner joke. It was when the guy goes to the bar, complains about his steak, saying this is tough and old boots. They can't eat this, and we've already seen poor Stan and his hole in his shoe. I think he has a hole in his shoe in every film he does. and he uses it to fill his shoes. Get that'll be great, and he's walking along. And you think, oh, that's the gag. He's that's the joke. But no, it's the fact that later on he gets attacked by rabid dogs because he's got meat in his shoe, and he's like fending them off and like going, oh, what's going on? Then they end up throwing the shoe, and the dogs go. It's just so. It's again, it's like a 3-stage gag. It's like this is the build up. We've got a hole in the shoe. Yeah. This is kind of where it's going. And I think it's just, oh, it was so well done and played out. And I think their reactions, and again, having like Laurel and Hardy and like Ollie's kind of like straight, he tries to be the straight man to Laurel's comedy, which plays out perfectly, and they do the switcheroo at times. But I was broken. I ended up watched, like after it happened, I was like, that was so fucking clever and so just like, because you talk about like jokes now, like comedians, like if you go and see like a stand-up show, there's a Northeast comedian called Ross Noble. He'll start a joke at the start, give the middle like halfway through the show, then finish on the joke that he started at the beginning. And I love that. That's kind of like not treating the audience like the steward. It's like little nods and winks in. Remember this bit? This is coming. Don't worry. This would come into that bit. I was like, just so well done. But and again, it's hopping back to what I said before. These guys, as you said, were so ahead of the time when it comes to like the jokes and the kind of the humor. Yes, there is a little bit of like slap and tickle, like raunchiness thrown in, but they don't rely on it with other comedians and stuff at the times. So I know, like as Jill said, when Lola's, and she looks absolutely amazing, but she's no like woman that's kind of like, oh, I need a man to look after. She looks after herself. And her character is so cutthroat and like interesting. And when she like attacks poor Stan like on the bed, like again, it's the little things that they do with it, because it could have been, oh, I'm just going to go straight for the deeds. No, it's like she grabs his leg, puts his hand up her leg, starts taking it up his thigh. They fall off the bed, they go under the bed, they have a whole like exorcist moment where the bed floats in the air, and it just kind of like leads in from there. It's like the joke's not just one note. It's like, oh, you think this bit's funny? I'm going to take it to the next stage. And that was kind of like my impression when I was watching it. I was like, this has got so many layers, and oh, I just fell in love with it all over again.
It's the physical comedy from her.
Yeah.
The sheer physical comedy, the fact that it's not just in this scene, it's when the her husband's tied up and she literally yanks him down off the ceiling and kind of like falls down with him. Mm-hmm. She is, and I love the fact that her character, he tries to explain the plan to her and she's like, no, I get it. Where do we start? She doesn't need it explaining twice. She understands what you're saying. She was a brilliant character. I absolutely loved her. I wasn't that bothered about the real Mary. Like, I didn't care because Lola was such a presence. I was like, I'm happy to stick with you. You be Mary. Yeah. Let's you be Mary.
But, there was so many funny bits in it, though, as well. And can we just, like, because remember, this is 1937. The practical effects they tried to do in this as well. I was astounded.
That was something I wanted to talk about as well, because it really threw me for a loop when, you know, Ollie's in the floor.
Yeah.
And they do the whole head spinning. And like, I can understand that to a degree, but then it's the head pulling. And I'm like, how? It's the 30s. Are you doing this when it doesn't look like there's a great deal going on?
No. So it would have been just like a model, like bit of rubber, because you could see it was drawn on. But it's the fact that was how it was cut together. It was a seamless, as you said, it was a seamless cut. And I know when we talk about seamless cuts, because I think me and Sam watched the same copy today that came up at the start saying this has been restored. There's been scenes that were lost and they've found and they've put them in. So it was quite interesting watching it, because there was bits where you knew was absolutely, as it was filmed today, it was crystal clear. And then there was shaking cam footage, like almost
it looked like it was wobbling. It looked like someone had gotten the filter and just wobbled it a bit, so you could clearly tell the bits that were missing, the bits that had been redone up. But it didn't. It doesn't take away from what you watch, and like you're still in it. Mm-hmm. But having that at the beginning is a massive help to say this movie was, you know, it is very old and it needed to be placed back together with tender love and care, and this is what we've done, and please be, you know, please enjoy, kind of thing. But yeah, I was like, at first I was like, whoa. Hopefully I won't get motion sickness from this.
Well, like, again, with the, like, the practical effects that was used, because it goes back to not just getting the like a comedy performance. It, like at certain times in the movie, it was like you're watching a magic show where you're trying to work out how they were doing certain things. It's like the joke when they go into the river or the pond for the second time and they're soaking wet, and Stan's trying to, Ollie's trying to light up a cigar, and he's going, oh, all the matches are wet. So Stan lights up his thumb. It's like, how is he? It's clearly got to be a fake thumb, but it's done so well. It was like,
but it's seeing Ollie later going, But he continuously, if you watch him, he continuously keeps doing that with his thumb to get it to work. And I'm like, that is such brilliant callbacks.
Well, and that's after he, like, the first time it happens and he sees it, he gives Stan a look and then he gives us a look.
One of the things I love
is the constant look that he keeps giving the audience about Stan.
He does it a couple of times that he kind of breaks the fourth wall and like looks to go.
Yeah, it's kind of like letting you in on the joke though as well. I like that.
Yes, yes.
Like, a lot of the greats do. Like, Groucho used to do it as well for the Marx Brothers, when like there was a joke that kind of like might not land, or you might like that'll take a few seconds. He would like give a little wink or a nudge to the audience type thing to say, "Don't worry, something's coming." Or a thing, but
wait a minute. Fun fact: the scene with the hat.
Right.
It's made of licorice.
Right.
So when he's chomping away at it, it's a licorice hat. The Marx Brothers go on to use exactly the same technique later on in one of their films. The Marx Brothers actually take quite a fair bit from Laurel and Hardy. But it was never in a bad way. It was, these are our influences. These are who we are, you know. It kind of our peers kind of thing, and we're trying to impress them. It wasn't a case of we're trying to steal things. That's how I read and watched stuff. Because there's a lot of people who are influenced by them and a lot of people who influenced them. I mentioned Charlie Chaplin earlier. He was a huge part of Stan Laurel's life.
Buster Keaton was
I love that man so much. Buster Keaton, if you don't know who he is probably one of the funniest physical comedians that has ever graced this world.
And the best stuntman you'll ever see. Because he did all his own stunts.
You know the house one?
Yeah.
Where the house, that's still to this day. And I know that's done like when? How many years ago? And I'm still to this day. And he does the train as well. Everything you see Buster Keaton does, he does himself. And he was actually one of Stan Laurel's very good friends.
Yeah.
They all kind of knew each other. The influence that Ollie got to kind of like want to be an actor, because Ollie saw himself as he's a big guy, and who wants to hire a big guy? And then he sees Roscoe Arbuckle, who is Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle, who will be the next person on my list when I finally decide to write my next article. He is a huge influence because he was a massive star of the silent era, and he's kind of like where Ollie went, oh well, if he can do it at his size, then I'm going to be okay and I can do it. The Abbott and Costello.
Right. I'm not a big fan of Abbott and Costello. I'll be honest.
I love the premise and the idea of their films, but the execution is a bit off for me. I'm not a huge fan, but because Stan, when it comes to Stan and Ollie is the performer. Stan is the businessman.
Yeah.
He is the one who kind of, he's actually credited as a producer on this film. He's not. He didn't at all. The studios, because he's so, I don't think we realize the power that Stan Laurel actually has in the industry. Like, if he's not happy, then nobody's happy. So he got a credit on this movie as a producer, when in actual fact he didn't do any of it. Because they just wanted to keep him happy. Yeah. But you went to Stan Laurel for help, and that's what Abbott and Costello did. They hated what Universal were giving them as scripts, and it was Stan Laurel who went in and worked with them on the scripts for their movies. So I don't think you realize like how much of a presence he was in Hollywood for someone who was not brought up there. Crazy.
Even Ollie said, like, if he was asked if like something was funny, he would tell people, "Go ask Stan, because he's the guy."
I'm the performer. He's the guy. Billy Wilder was actually planning on doing a movie with Stan in 1950. We all know Billy Wilder if you watch our Some Like It Hot review. But Stan's health wasn't the greatest in 1950, and when Ollie sadly passed away, Stan was heartbroken to the beat, to the point where he said, "I will never perform again." What he did was he went back to England, gave his telephone number out to all of his fans. He said, "Ring me, I'll talk to you." And they did. They would ring him, and it was the company that he kept but he was absolutely heartbroken. But because he was really poorly himself, he couldn't actually attend his funeral. Ollie is buried in Valhalla Memorial Center in California, in Los Angeles, and Stan is in, he's like 2 miles away. They're not that far away from each other. But yeah, Ollie's funeral was very somber, the somber affair. Stan's was huge. Had the big Hollywood works. Buster Keaton spoke at his funeral. Dick Van Dyke was at his funeral, because Dick Van Dyke, again, inspiration, the kind of like was inspired by him. But there was something Buster Keaton said at Laurel.
I've got that one.
That was it. Chaplin wasn't the funniest. I wasn't the funniest. This man was the funniest.
That's nice.
It's beautiful. And Dick Van Dyke said, if anyone at my funeral has a long fit, no, this is what Stan Laurel had said to Dick Van Dyke. If anyone at my funeral has a long face, I'll never speak to them again. And his final words, this is the comedian right up until the end. So his nurse was about to inject him with something, and he went, I like skiing. And she went, you like skiing? And she goes, oh, have you been skiing recently? And she was like, no, never been skiing before in my life. I just would rather be skiing than have you stick that needle in my arm right now. And she went to turn around and turn back, and he passed away.
Oh, dear.
That was his final words, though. He was joking right up until the end.
And the thing is, with a lot of those, when people talk about that, like, I can hear it in his voice, too.
Yeah.
I can, like, hear it the way that he would have delivered it. Because, yeah, he's just so great at it.
Yeah. He's buried at Forest Lawn Hollywood Hills Cemetery, which is literally 2 miles away from Valhalla, which is the closest that they will ever be to each other.
Unless someone digged them up. We'll not get that dark.
This we'll not go down that way, but yeah, it was... They lived a life. They really, really lived a life. I mean, I watched two documentaries on them, and one of them I ended up having to turn off because it was literally just a life. They're womanizing. They like their women.
To be fair, Ollie, let's say Oliver Hardy wasn't the most attractive men, so the fact that he had
was
fame.
So cute, though. He had a cute face.
Like British Bulldog, very looking like that would probably be.
But he rethought the cash run.
I also read somewhere that, in a couple of places actually, that Stan's daughter, when she was a child, didn't care for Ollie because every time she saw him in the movies, he was bullying her dad.
He had two children, one the little girl and one and a little boy, which broke him because he only lived 9 days, but apparently the next film he did after that was probably the best, and I can't remember what the name of the film was, but was the best he ever did because he just literally put his heart and soul into it. He's got the documentaries that you'll find on YouTube about them, they are hours long because there's so much to cover.
But like as you said, like the things that they did do, like they worked hard. It wasn't just the movies, it wasn't just the shows. They went on tours, they had stage shows. So again, they lived a life, and what a fantastic life it would have been. But one person I want to mention as well, because like going back to the movie, like We Out West, because I expected Stan and Ollie being like the highlights, which they were, but the protagonist, the guy who were kind of fighting against, James Finlayson, who played Mickey Finn, was hilarious. Like, again, it was one of those faces, as soon as you saw it, I recognize him. Like, he's probably been in so many different films and from the time, and probably not got the fame and fortune that he probably deserved. But he was hilarious in this movie, and like the kind of repertoire or like the bouncing off Stanley and Ollie as well. It was the perfect threesome. Like, not put there, perfect threesome, shall we say?
Hey, we're in our classic
well, time. He was in a number of their productions too. Yeah. He was the antagonist for a lot of their shows. And I actually found something interesting.
Me too.
Him.
I know what it is.
Well, let Jill, wait, I was going to say, you've stolen enough people's comments. Let Jill go with it.
But I knew that when you mentioned it earlier, I knew exactly which one it was going to be because it's the one that really, really makes me smile. So, by all means.
Thanks. So, Homer Simpson's expression is based on James Finlayson's same expression in these movies. He would do this dope, and that's what Dan Castanella, I think,
the voice.
Based that on when he came up with Homer's probably most iconic expression. So yeah, when I read that, I was just like over the hills.
I couldn't stop smiling. It's when he fires the gun off the bed and he goes, "Don't!" But I'd already read that before I'd seen the film, so I kind of like that really like added an extra
kind of watching out type thing.
I gave. But yeah, I thought that was one of the best, like especially the influence in pop culture. And it's not even Laurel and Hardy; it's somebody else. Like,
no, yeah,
I couldn't get over that he was Scottish.
Was he?
Yep, he was Scottish.
Yes.
Like his accent, like when I'm like, cause I've just got his like information up here. It says a Scottish actor born in Scotland. I was like, how the fuck did he hide that accent so well? Especially back then when, because they wouldn't have dialect coaches and stuff back then.
No, wouldn't be like what we have today.
So him doing that American accent was just blew my mind. But as you said, his facial expressions, and I know we've just done an episode with some of the greatest mustaches ever been known in Tombstone. His mustache was greater than anything I've ever seen.
It put Wyatt Earp's to shame.
Yes.
To shame.
But
yeah, it was pretty impressive. The whole costumes though were pretty impressive.
But do you know that it's fake?
Don't break the illusion, no. Oh, it's gonna have a
Chris style there. Anyways, unless my sources are wrong, that's what I read.
If it is, then the makeup department did an amazing job making that stay on his face, especially with all the movement and everything that he did. But the costumes in this were absolutely fantastic, and I don't know if it's because of how clear the picture was. I got to see a lot of details in the costumes.
Yeah.
I love the fact that
all these trousers, like the patches.
Yeah, and I love the fact that when Stan ate the hat, they didn't change the hat.
No,
the hat stays exactly the same. Like that's a detail that like could have been really like overlooked and kind of like forgotten about. But no, they kept the hat the same all the way through. Lola's dresses, how she looked in, and to be wearing negligee.
Yes, shoulders being on view.
Yeah, it was. Very risky. I mean, it was only in the 20s when it was done in Nosferatu that it was kind of hailed, oh shit, this is too scandalous for movies. Like, she wore exactly the same outfit. So there's only, not that many years in between them. Mm-hmm. The costumes and everything were absolutely chef's kiss.
So leading up to the costumes, can we spend like a little bit of time just talking about the facial expressions in this movie? Like, I think this is probably the coming from the silent era to doing the thing, so a lot more emotive in the facials. Each and every one of them, wow! And again, going back to James Finlayson's, the one thing that stands out, because I said Stan does all the facial expressions, and Ollie's always like, but then when he kicks the bucket and it's like Ollie's head, his facial expressions, like he's just kicked a brick, and he hops up the stairs, and you can actually feel, and those are the moments where I was like in fits of laughter, and like kind of taking us back to my childhood, why I love these silly movies, because it shouldn't have affected them as much as that. But all the different facial expressions that each of the characters gave us all the way through, it told the story a million times more than like words at times as well.
I love Stan's facial expression. Like the comedy in it alone is brilliant, and the fact when he started to do the crying one, because that's what I know him for. I was like,
yeah.
But it's Ollie and the con- contempt that he can show in his face is just, but it's not hatred. It's just, oh God, this again.
Yes, exactly.
And he can do it in different ways.
I do feel like that, like Jake is the Ollie with the facial expressions. Is like, oh, yeah. these boys are acting themselves, saying stupid things again.
Yeah. Jake does contentment very well.
It comes from a loving place.
So I found something. I found something about that as well.
All right.
If I can.
Cool.
So apparently Stan left a lot of those scenes where Ollie is giving us that face for the end of the day, because apparently at the end of all the shooting days, Ollie liked to go play golf.
Yeah.
And he'd like, as soon as he was done, he was out playing golf. And so if production was taking long, he'd leave those looks for the end of the day when they were really frustratingly real.
Yes, I'm
hurry the fuck up.
Exactly.
That a golf course to get to.
Because I know you mentioned before about Lola kind of like corpsing and breaking during a certain aspect. But it felt it felt like the whole movie was filled with those type of elements. It's like when the band's playing the little song and you get the famous dance scene where Ollie and Stan is doing the dance in front of the bar or like the hotel. And the band is just playing away. And I like when they walk in, they kind of break down and they start laughing, like what they've just experienced. I don't think they were meant to do that. I think it just like that was like a natural thing that happened, and they went, "No, we'll just keep in because it worked so nicely." But it must have been so fucking like I don't know how they did it, because there was times when Stan kind of broke and like you could see glimpses then, but Ollie was amazing. Ollie never broke.
He was such a professional throughout. Do you think though that this is just a case of this is the outline, so this is where this, you know, this is the start, middle and end, go and fill the gaps? Do you really think that's what they do? Because it doesn't, I can't imagine you can recreate half of what they've done, like replicate it. It's kind of got to be this is it or nothing kind of thing.
I think in what we mentioned before, again, I know we talked about, like, I had to keep telling each other to shut up because the
Stan. No, we got too carried away.
Yeah, the Stan and Ollie, movie that came out in 2018 with Steve Coogan and John C. Reilly, they went into that aspect when it comes to the show. I think Stan was quite a dictator when it comes to how the show was meant to be. I think Ollie was a little bit more laid back, but everything had, I think, was planned out. Again, I could be wrong.
The documentaries I watched, as like I said earlier, Stan, Ollie was the performer. Stan was the man, basically. Yeah. Like everything went through him. So yeah, that makes sense. I watched that not that long ago. And the minute I heard Stan Laurel speak today, I went, oh my God, Steve Coogan, you did such a grand job. You really emulated Stan's voice perfectly. And
John
He really did. And John C. Reilly, just, I think just the kindness of Ollie, because I just imagine him being like a very kind person and very grateful for his position. Because he doesn't come from the world that Stan does. Like Stan's been through the hardship of the theater, of the vaudevillian's lifestyle, of going into, I mean, he had his first, Stan's never really done anything on his own. He's always had somebody. His first partner, obviously he worked a lot with Charlie Chaplin, but his next one was Mae Dalberg. And they did a double act together, but apparently their relationship was so toxic to work with. It's nothing like what you got when he starts working with Ollie. So I think, I don't know, I just get this impression of Ollie that he's just so happy to be there. Like, I'm happy that this is my life kind of thing.
I just can't get over like as you said, the comedy in this movie, and I feel not embarrassed, like that I kind of forgotten it a little bit, like, from my childhood, because, as I said, these are the films, and this is the aspect that kind of, like, I was brought up on. So I was kind of, I knew what I was expecting. I was like, and again, foolishly, I thought it was just going to be like slapstick in a way where, like, Oliver slaps Stan about. There is one movie where I think, I can't remember now, where he just basically slaps him for like finish to the movie because he's completely doing it. But this felt like a completely different Laurel and Hardy movie, because they weren't playing like the bumbling oafs that were on a mission to do a job. And that was the good element. And I love the fact that they had a bit of integrity as well, because as soon as they realized like the fuck up, the mistake, I know it wouldn't have been a good film if they just went, all right, and just went off and done something else. Film over, shit movie. But the fact that they
get the donkey and go.
And the fact they got chased out of Dodge, and the dust went with them as well, which was hilariously well done. It was basically just like the dust blown. It was just like probably just like the scene shot in backwards, but it just looked fantastic. But to the fact that, as Jill said, when they're trying to get into the place with, I mean, sorry, it was you who said it, with the donkey, and the physical comedy with the donkey, and how they used it as well.
Yeah.
It's like all the tropes were there. You knew some of the jokes. It's like, oh, they got to the window. It's like, where's the tools? Down here. It's like, oh. And then there's the whole, when Stan's fucking up the rope with Ollie and he gets so frustrated, he just tugs on it and it sends him into a somersault, which, again, must have hurt. Like, I'm sorry, there's no way of doing that without it hurting. And then just stand up and just dust himself off. And like, they don't even have bad words and stuff, where the Marx Brothers, they will be like, handbag and fighting.
Yeah, they'd be fighting. But as much as that, there's them lovely pauses between everything they do. So it's kind of like, with the Marx Brothers, it's very fast and quick. And that's what I learned when I watched their movie. Everything's like a reaction kind of thing. But with these, they give you a moment to breathe. To take in the laugh, to take in the moment, and then they'll move on to the next thing.
Makes it funnier as well, because you laugh initially, and then there's the gap, and you're like, you cut. It's like infectious that it brings the laugh forward as well. It's kind of, but again, it's just a mastery of, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And what were you going to say there, Jill? Sorry.
Oh no, you're fine. I was just, well, when there was a good breaking point, I was going to say that I kind of got raised on this. Like, it sounds like you were. My dad used to watch these, and we'd find ourselves Saturday afternoon watching whatever Laurel and Hardy came on. So that's how I got my exposure as well, and most of my viewing was from that long ago. And so coming back to see this, like you said, there's a lot of things that you expect, and then you kind of see again what you didn't see as a youngster.
Yes.
And it's seeing the whole, it's like watching a new movie all over again, or a new show.
Oh, 100%.
Very much was for me, because this is my first ever Laurel and Hardy movie.
Oh, you've got to go watch others.
Absolutely. Now that I know that, like, I got a massive shock when, because I was just going to watch it. I wasn't going to watch the film yesterday. I wanted to watch it today. I like things to be fresh in my head, ready for when we come to record. So I was just going to watch a few documentaries. So I typed Laurel and Hardy in, and then all these films came in, and I was like, the second one along was this one. And I was like, oh shit, so many. I think when we did the Marx Brothers, the only one that wasn't there was the one that we were going to watch.
And I messed up on that. I picked the wrong one. I got mixed up on that one. That was my fault.
Oh, but I still love that film. Like, I don't remember this being something that, because my mom loves classic Hollywood movies. And I don't remember this being something that she would have watched. But I always remember when we talked about this, the Stan and Ollie bio film, she was very interested in watching it as well. So I don't know. I don't feel like this is definitely my first. I do remember, though, one of their shorts being in the middle of one of my videotapes. Can't tell you what it was, but it was like, you know how it has like one movie, two movies? It was right in the middle. It was like my Ghostbusters 1 and 2 had Batman.
Yeah.
This one had a Laurel and Hardy on him.
Which, and again, this is what scares me about, like, this is going to make me sound so old. So old Paul's going to have a moan at the youth of today, guys. Is I don't think, and again, with cinema the way it is now, and with you having so much at your fingertips, you can basically, any film that you want to see, you can have access to it. The youth of today, yes, I did use the phrase, the youth of today, probably won't go looking for these type of movies when they should.
Yeah, we spoke about this in Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Like, it's sad that they will look at something and go, because it's in black and white, no, that's it. They write it off completely. When these movies give you some of the best comedy, storytelling, makeup, like if that's where you want your eye wants to go to, makeup, props, costume, everything, there is detail gone into these that you can't you can to a degree today, but it's so easy to do today, whereas when if you think back when they did it, it's not as easy, so it makes it more, for me, more special.
Well, you say that, but at the same time, I'm the scene that you have behind us with them dancing, I have found pops up a lot on people's YouTube videos. And really? they're setting music, like them dancing to other music besides what's in the movie.
Right.
I know that it makes a brief appearance in there's a version of Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars that somebody put to all kinds of classic movie dancing.
Right.
And so if you go Google that, it's fabulous because whoever did it timed all of the dance moves from all these different movies just absolutely perfectly. But this dance makes a little cameo in there. And then there's also a couple that I was privy to today. There's a version, the Gap Band song Party Train, put to this dance, and like they play the song with showing this dance, and that fits in very well. And then also there is a Creedence Clearwater Revival that somebody did with over this, and it fits. It's not as good as the Gap Band, but it works. And so people are watching it still, and they're finding these ways to intermingle it with things that we know of now. I don't think it's completely gone.
No, no, good. I'm glad of that. Because again, if you want to be like a comedian or a filmmaker, and again, there's a lot of different things you can look at or like go to different schools of thought. But going back and watching like say a Laurel and Hardy, you could learn so much and take from it, and it only makes like say certain aspects better. What I want to see now with Jill saying that, I want to see the Top Grump version of Lee and Chris doing the Laurel and Hardy dance now to the music, just to see what if they can perform it any as good as this as well. Now, in Nerdy Up North as well, we do have a lot of double acts, which again for the Laurel and Hardy and certain things. So let's play a little game, shall we? So out of the like say we'll let the guest go first. So out of the Top Grumps, who is Laurel and Hardy out of Chris and Lee?
Oh, that's so hard.
I think Lee's got to be Laurel and Chris has got to be Hardy.
So
I think I'm going to have to agree.
So yeah, I would say Lee was definitely Hardy, and I would say Chris is Stan, because I can see Chris going. His little stance.
I know when he did that and had the music on, like the Laurel and Hardy music on as well, there was I got a little bit emotional because they are like moments that I do recognize from Laurel and Hardy. So I was like, how sad is that? It's like hearing the Laurel and Hardy do 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 do. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, that's a good call. I agree with that one.
So out of Becca and Sarah.
Oh, okay.
the Wonk girls. So who's the Laurel and Hardy of the Wonks? now the deep thought.
I don't know.
Can I see it?
I don't know.
It's, Becca's Laurel. Holly.
And Sarah's Sarah's Hardy.
Yeah. Sarah can do contempt like no other. She has such a straight face sometimes. Like, yeah.
So coming into the hard ones now. So out of Jake and Adam.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Yeah. Laurel, Adam, and Holly, Jake. Anything you've got Jake in, the other person's Laurel.
Right. So we're going, like, this one is going to be really hard now. The Trekking Boys. So out of Captain Goodwill and Graham, who's Laurel and Hardy out of that act?
Laurel is Goodwill.
Right.
Holly is Graham. Yeah, absolutely. Right. That's brilliant.
And to finalize it, like, me and Sam will go quiet. Jill has to answer this one. Out of me and Sammy.
I knew that's what was coming. Oh. I think I'm going to put you with Stan.
Right.
And Sammy with Ollie.
Yep. I would agree.
Right.
But so, if you switch it to monsters, I'd say I'm Laurel and Dan's Ollie.
So yes, just a little bit of fun there. But yeah.
That was so hard. Because we've been talking about their personalities and everything. So I'm like trying to be careful where I fit people. I totally agree with what you said with me and Paul though.
Well, and there's also, like, when you get all cheery and smiley, it's a little bit of emoting Ollie there too.
Yeah.
Like the big the cheeky smile and everything.
Now, and again, just to play devil's advocate here, and because we've got a new podcast as well, the Anime Club. I would do this. Oh. I would do the switch in reverse. I would say Phoebe is more Laurel, and Chris is the Oliver Hardy in that relationship, because she is
exactly
the quite.
Same as he is in groups.
So, but yeah, that's what I would say with that one, because Phoebe's the all like lightness and happy, and I think she would be like all sad if something went wrong. Where Chris is always like looking at the camera, like just disappointed in everything in life.
Done here. What am I doing now? Which one is it? He's not here, so it's all right.
Because he's too busy swanning himself on a holiday, but yes. I'm not going to ask you to rate this movie. All I'm going to say is, because I don't think you can, because it's
top marks across the board, if that's the case, because it's classic, it's timeless, it's perfect. Mm. It's how, you know, comedy should be seen. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yes. I'm just over the moon that we have, like, strong northeast connections to these characters as well, so that's quite
well. Mm-hmm. Fancy a road trip
to go and see the statue?
No, to go to the museum.
Yes, all right. I knew there was a museum. Yeah,
it's the only Laurel and Hardy museum in the world, and it's in Ulverston, Cumbria.
Right, all right.
You can go to where my family's from in Cumbria. We don't have to, but we could go to the museum.
I know there's a statue in North Tanside.
Yeah.
We saw the Laurel and Hardy statue in Leicester Square in London when we went to see...
Did we got a photograph of that?
Yeah.
Aww.
So that was quite a nice experience.
When I was in Paris, there was amongst many cafes that were there. And you know how they have the roofs that kind of come down and along? Mm-hmm. One of them had like a whole line of like movie little... Mm-hmm. Miniatures, like they had Dorothy. It was, I don't know if it was made out of wood or what, but it was like Dorothy, and then on the corner was Laurel and Hardy, and it was so sweet. Mm-hmm. Like all these different like classic characters. So, but the Laurel, I remember the Laurel and Hardy one we saw. I think you were up above, weren't there?
Yeah, they were kind of almost like falling over or something like that. But again, it's such a timeless, like, of its time, and again, not relying on like cheap sexist gags and stuff like that. Like the vulgarity, comedy, the comedy was just so well done.
I found a little bit of a connection for myself too.
Oh, go for it. Yes.
So, before They were Laurel and Hardy. Ollie was in Jacksonville, Florida, because that's where the filming company that he was working for was based in, which is also where I went to college.
Mm-hmm. Ah, there you go.
So and then I lived there for a year after that. So I've got a little bit of a connection there too.
No, as Dan's playing, like say the connections to what was it, Adventures with Babysitting, we're just trying to connect it to us. We're being a bit more selfish.
Yeah, yeah, the 666 degrees of separation. I think that's what she meant in the end, where she's trying to connect every film we do to Adventures in Babysitting or Chris Columbus. The one for Silent Hill is probably the best one she's ever done.
All right, interesting. I'll watch that tomorrow. But yeah, I'm so glad we did this episode, and I'm so glad we got to kind of go back and experience it as well. So
I needed a good smile today.
Yeah,
definitely. But yeah, again, the good thing about these movies as well, a lot of them are free on YouTube.
Yep.
So if anyone wanted to try and catch up or try and experience them, just don't go in the mindset of saying, oh, it's old, it's black and white. Go check out the performances. As I said, James Flaherson is amazing. Sharon Lin, who played Lolo, is absolutely divine. Like everything in this is done like so well, and you can tell there's love and care put into these type of aspects, and which I know it sounds really weird to say, there's no wasted jokes, because there's a lot of things where they're like comedians or comedy shows or comedy things throw so many different jokes in to try and see what sticks and what doesn't. Everything lands, everything sticks. Completely. Everything's funny.
If you think that a black and white movie is not for you, go and watch the Maltese Falcon review that I did with Chris, because Chris has never watched a black and white movie until then, and he absolutely loved it, because these movies, like I said earlier, have great storylines, great plot points, great comedy. They are classic for a reason.
But yes,
was Some Like It Hot black and white as well, or was that color?
It was black and white. They did do a color version, I think.
I don't think I got to see your show on that, but that is a good movie. I enjoy that one.
I think we just laughed all the way through it as well. Just like what we were talking about.
I was trying not to shit all over Marilyn's memory, to be honest, because it's an absolute nightmare in that. But like I said on there, I love that woman beyond fandom. So it's, you know, I say it with love. I'm just telling you what I learned that day. But I really have enjoyed this. And to be honest, when I started doing my notes for it, I could have gone really hard with the history of Laurel and Hardy. But I had to stop myself and kind of remember that a movie has to be talked about at the same time, because there is a lot. So if you are interested, there is countless amount of documentaries on YouTube to watch about them, because these guys, they lived a life, and it was so interesting. They lived in some of the greatest times. They had some of the greatest fights with studios. It's an interesting one. You can go down a massive rabbit hole, which I did today.
And there's such a, like you said earlier, there's such a repertoire to pull from to go back and watch more. If you're looking for your next, I do recommend Toad in the Hole, or if you don't have a lot of time, The Music Box.
And you mentioned Music Box, and one thing we haven't mentioned, and I think it'll be a miss not to comment on, the music in this movie.
Yeah, it was so sweet.
Everything is just so fun. I think back in the day as well, going back from the talkies and going back to the silent movies, where you had like someone who's playing their instruments next to the music playing, next to the movie playing, because they didn't have like the functionality to have sound. It was very much like that, where like it was like during the tense moment, it was like or during like a happy moment, like all the songs playing. The music used in this was to tell or move the story along. And again, with great movies and great storytelling, the music plays a big part in this. And I think this done it so well. And like, if you like, you can go back to like I say modern, but go back to like films like Jaws, or even like something as scary as Halloween. Like, the music plays a part in those aspects to build the tension and build this. This kind of doesn't build the tension, but builds the comedy.
Yeah, it was sweet as well. Yeah. It was a very sweet moment of them two just, you know, singing next to each other. But the songs in this didn't stick with us, not like the ones from the Marx Brothers, unfortunately. But what I do have stuck in my head on repeat is Shine on Harvest Moon, which is another one that Ollie sings, and I can't get it out of my head. I can hear him, and I only know the words to the beginning bit. The Shine on Harvest Moon bit, that's the only words I know.
We'll get Sammy to sing it for us later. It's fine, don't worry. So, yes. So, what have we got planned for this week, Sammy?
Tomorrow, brand new episode of the Monsters of North podcast. It hits YouTube at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, please remember to hit the notification bell so you're notified that the episode is available. And we are going to Silent Hill.
So people's going to get all like erotic and sexed up over a pyramid head then.
I wouldn't blame them. Yeah, it's only the movie that we're doing because Jesus wept. If I tried to do the video game as well, it would be a nearly 4-hour recording of me trying to figure that out along with the movie, because I'm not going to lie, this was a very confusing time for me.
It's a confusing movie, to be honest. Like I said, there's lots going on, but doesn't really nothing ever happen at the same time.
I think I messaged Paul halfway through the week going, I don't know what's going on here. How am I going to record this episode?
Just going with lots of questions, no answers. Yeah, that's probably the best way to describe it.
Exactly.
We do have a new episode of Top Grumps that's coming out on Tuesday. I don't know who they're doing yet. I can't remember.
I don't think they know. I think they're just pulling it out their arse, to be honest.
Wow. Hopefully, really ladies in the chat can tell us. I know Top Grumps is live on, well, that episode goes out around 1 o'clock on Tuesday. We do have an episode of Lee's Dragon Ball, which I cannot pronounce for the love of money for us. Oh, Screamboat, that's what they're doing, yes. They're doing a Steamboat Willie from Screamboat.
Interesting.
Which we got to watch last week, which was hilarious.
Those reviews are up if you want to go and watch it.
Then it's Lee on Friday. It's Anime Friday. I think that's a new name. Well, Lee's Dragon Ball goes out because he's doing it every 2 weeks. And then we've got the Anime Club that goes live at 6 o'clock with Phoebe and Chris, because with Chris going away, I think he's recorded like 5 episodes or something just basically to put out. So that's there.
It's been a lot of work, bless him, in order to have this 2 weeks off.
Yes. Well, they'll probably have other stuff flying by as well. Have you got anything planned for this week, Jill? Anything with OF?
I think next weekend I did an episode of their rewrites. I think it comes up for airing next weekend. We rewrote an episode of Deep Space Nine that was not well received and tried to just do some tweaks and make it better. So
I did watch one of those episodes where I think Chris rewrote an episode of Sub Rosa.
Yes.
And like his idea was having a Greggs in space or on Starfleet, I think needs an Oscar, I think, or a BAFTA, whatever you get for writing duties these days. Yeah. I think it was just chef's kiss, perfect.
Well,
Phoebe's is just tall
my
as
pitch, my pitch featured sorry. A Greggs to kind of throw back to that. I put something of Greggs in my pitch.
Oh, good.
Because I loved his addition of that, or his including that so much, and I just wanted to
just do a throwback
shout out. Yeah.
So, Phoebe's has told us what they're doing, and I'm not going to even try and pronounce it. So.
No, it's Dirahiriduru.
Sounds like diarrhea or something like that. Yeah, so yeah.
That's right. Also, there is a brand new episode of Countdown to Doomsday. The clock is ticking, and we are doing Ant-Man.
I'm supposed to be recording that, isn't it? With yous, yeah. I think. All right.
Because it's not done yet. So,
so
talk about
oh well.
that a bit. yeah, but the Countdown to Doomsday, the audio for this episode of Monsters Up North will be available for you tomorrow. Remember, you will need to search Nerdy Up North and Monsters Up North individually to find said episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Please remember to like, share, and subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you never miss anything from the Nerdy Up North crew.
And just to ask the question, are yous ready for what is going to be coming after this month, after this week, sorry? We have full blast, foot coming in your faces, Lee. Action April is in full effect. We're starting with Tango and Cash. We're going with a sci-fi action Arnie with Total Recall. And we are finishing it with Dread.
It's going to be mint. And we're doing it all with Lee. We're just taking Lee and we're going to keep him in the Nerdy Up North camp so he can't go back to Top Grumps ever again.
But yeah, so I think Lee and Jake's, well, I think it's just Lee for Tango and Cash. Then yeah, Lee and Jake for Total Recall and the lovely Phoebes. Phoebes is joining us for Dread as well. So I am excited and scared to what characters or what type of element Lee will be dressed up as.
I don't think we're going to get anything next week because if we're not pre-recording it, we're going to be out all day.
Yeah.
So... Mm-hmm. Just don't think it's going to be anything, but I can't say for sure on Total Recall, mm-hmm. and definitely can't say for sure on Dread.
To be fair, Tango and Cash will probably will need to sort out recording that because, as you said, next Sunday we will be at Haywood Horror Festival down in Haywood near Manchester. So yes,
yep, there we're going there.
Yeah, we're going there to buy cool stuff. I think they're doing showing like horror shorts as well this time, so that's going to be quite interesting.
There's a lot more. There's a scare zone going to be there. Me and
mm-hmm.
I can't remember when I was talking to Lee about it. Was I talking to Lee about it? I must have been. Are you?
I can't. Wasn't me. I've talked to Lee. Fuck. I've been to York. I've run away from you.
There was the scare zones in there and everything. So it sounds like it's going to be a bit different from last year. Mm-hmm. As long as we stay away from any owls.
Any animals, basically. You're a bit of a wolf.
Yeah, yes. And I'm not taking my vape like I did last time. I'm buying disposables. I'm not having an incident where my bag's like on fire.
Yeah.
So lessons were learned from last year.
So yes. So thank you everyone who's been in the chat. I know we've not paid you much attention because to be honest, we've been enjoying our conversation more than yours, so that's fine.
And Lee's been watching over everything.
Lee's been in the shower. Lee, that's what you got confused by. But yes, just to say a big thank you for everyone who supported us. I keep banging on, but with the blocks being removed from Meta, we are starting to reach other people. We're starting to grow again. It is getting more exciting. So hopefully we're going to have more fun, do more things. And like, see what we've got coming up. We've got a few ideas in the pipeline to make people feel uncomfortable and make people laugh at the same time. So same bat time, same bat channel.
Stay nerdy, everyone. Bye.
Bye. Hey, bye.